And good evening. You guessed it. It is the Raucous Caucus, and you guessed it once more. This is Terry DeCester with
Mark Levine.
Is that true?
That is my name.
Okay, yeah. And
Garland Nixon.
I think they kicked you out.
Yeah, well, I think he's going to have a lot of time on his hands soon, and he was thinking about maybe we'll joining the Raucous Caucus.
You think so? I don't think we get a word in edgewise.
I don't think we want him. He's 80-some years old. 82. He might quiet down. You know, who knows? I mean, certainly we're going to be quiet tonight, as usual, right, guys?
In nice our usual peaceful fashion.
Yeah, right.
Okay, yeah. Hey, before we get into topic and all that, gentlemen, we got to mention, you know, that an extraordinary thing is happening at the end of this month on the 22nd, which I know you guys are aware of. Our listeners are probably not. But on the 22nd, which is a Raucous Caucus day, and in the Raucous Caucus evening. Well, the whole day.
It's dedicated.
Monday, Raucous Caucus Day, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
I think the mayor is going to actually declare it official Raucous Caucus Day.
There you go. He should. There's no question about it. Yeah. Anyway, in the Raucous Caucus on that night, when the 22nd, we will be at Ben's. And that'll be the first time that we have, guys, our guest host who's picking guest topic. You know, this thing that, we've used for thank you gifts in the last pledge drive, and we got response. And indeed, that particular person who did respond and receive that gift with a generous donation to WPFW is going to be
co-hosted. Do we know his topic yet?
No. He's going to send us the topics the Friday before so that we can sort of weed through them and make sure that we're prepared.
All right.
And, you know. But anyway, the reason I mentioned that is because the pledge drive's coming up again. And we're going to be offering that premium, that gift in exchange for a donation again, that for X number of dollars, you get to pick the topic, or for X more dollars, you got to join us on the show as a host and pick the topic. And I don't know, what are we going to charge now since we're getting such fantastic response? $2,000, $3,000, you think it should be?
Something like that.
Roughly.
$10,000.
Give or take $2,000 or $3,000.
Yeah, give or take $2,000 or $3,000, plus or minus 35 cents.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, we're open about it. But anyway, once we get into the pledge drive, which we won't be doing tonight, but we'll be doing soon, we want you guys to think about now, joining the Raucous Caucus, giving a donation, gift being you get to be on the show.
There were three options, I recall. You can either give us a topic or join the show, or for more, do both.
Do both. Yeah. Right. It's the same premise we work under.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know, how much are you paying now, Mark, to participate? You're paying Garland, what, $35 just to be here or something like that?
I'm just charging you.
Oh, okay.
The rest of us don't have a problem.
Oh, all right. I was just checking. Anyway, interesting times we live in, gentlemen. Interesting times. And our
strange days indeed.
Our topic tonight is, could it happen here? Can the President of the United States, under certain circumstances, could he shut down the internet? And what's inspiring this, of course, is what's going on in Egypt and, of course, has gone on in China over the years, closing down the internet, stopping communication specifically because you want to stop
communication.
They did it in Iran, too.
That's right.
The three examples.
And if you remember last week, we had a great show with FBI agent Michael
German,
right? And he was affirming that all these rogue activities are going on anyway within the FBI and many government so-called security
agencies. By the way, if you missed that show, you really missed something.
Yeah, you did.
It's on my website. Go to marklevineradio.com and you can play it for yourself, download it. Really, if you don't know how the government is spying on us, you need to know. And that really, it was a very important
show that
you should listen to.
Yeah. And, you know, whatever social chaos, social development is going on in society, I mean, obviously a whole lot's going on in Egypt. I don't know if you guys know, but this movement basically was sparked through Facebook, a Facebook site called April 6, the April 6 movement. And not only that, but the opposition leader, who I know you've heard of, the former UN nuclear energy official,
Mohamed Abardi,
his Facebook has more than 240,000 members. And that's sort of what led to this showdown that's been happening in Egypt, those two sites, plus other communications
Isn't he the guy that told the Bush administration there was no weapons of mass destruction?
He is that guy.
In Iran.
Yeah, one of the few men with integrity that, once again, we totally ignored. You know, but their internet work and their Facebook pages and their efforts on the internet is really what started this whole you know, amazing.
Movement. It's a movement. Yeah, it's a movement, you know?
Yeah.
And it is a movement, though I think it's more than the internet. But you make your point, and then because a lot of it, frankly, is people in the streets that are upset by prices and, of course, 30 years of dictatorial rule.
I'm not saying
the internet didn't play a major role. It certainly did. But right now, there are millions of people in the street, far more than are using the internet.
Yeah. So, but the sad thing is, too, they have, since Friday, the internet has been shut down in Egypt. So there cannot be any communication. I mean, shut down completely.
And let's say this, and I'll say this. It may not have happened if not for the internet, if not for Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the question is, you know, is internet access a right? And should it be a right for everybody in the world, for all Americans? And if it should be a right, how do we keep it to be a right? Article 19 of the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights asserts, quote, "Everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers."
There's the First Amendment to the Constitution. Congress shall pass no law abridging the freedom of speech, as far as I'm concerned. If you deny access to the internet, you are abridging the freedom of speech. So I think it's unconstitutional to turn off the internet or to deny equal access to it.
And we know, as we mentioned, that China, you know, shuts it down periodically, shut down Google, shut down Yahoo, negotiates.
They filter it regularly.
Filter it.
I had a big fight with Google over that.
Yeah. And in China, there's over 475 million internet users, which is astounding, and that's essentially what they use for their access to news. We also got to keep in mind, as you know, that in the United States, there's still a struggle going on between major corporations, Congress, and the FCC on who's going to control what in the internet. That struggle is not going away, and who's going to have access, and what's the priority of data going to be?
Otherwise known as the net neutrality battle.
Yeah, but more important than that, guys, can it be shut down? And in case you didn't know, and I suspect my cohorts did know, but there have been somewhere between 14 and 35, depending on how you define it, pieces of legislation floating around in Congress trying to get what's called cybersecurity. And the current title of the current bill, S-21, is Cybersecurity and American Cyber Competitiveness Act. You love that. They use that name, Cybersecurity and Comparative American Cyber Competitive Acts, but within that act is the possibility, under, quote, a cyber emergency, whatever the hell that is, the President of the United States can, in fact, shut down the internet or shut down specific parts of the internet.
Well, you know, just like the Patriot Act, you know, the issue of security is always used when there is an effort to curb our free speech, to curb our abilities to communicate, to curb our civil rights. It's always under the guise of some type of security issue, because the only way that you can get a person to give up their rights is to scare the crap out of them.
Yep.
So you've got it's almost got to be like, well, if you don't allow us to do that, Mark, you'll surely die. Oh my gosh, I'll give up my rights, please. I don't want to die.
Well, and also people say, well, if you have nothing to hide, you don't mind your rights being taken away. That's another thing that they do. They say, you shouldn't mind, but you mind your rights being taken away. What have you done, Garland?
Well, you know, let me say something about that.
I know what you've done, Terry. You've got a long rap sheet. I don't know what Garland has done. Right.
Just because I post my rap sheet on the wall.
I was smart enough never to get caught.
Okay.
But let me say this, because I was in law enforcement for 27 years, and I teach Intro to Criminal Justice. Yeah. And that inevitably always comes up in class where some of these 18, 19-year-old kids say, well, I don't have anything to hide. And what I always say is this. You know, I was in law enforcement for a lot of years, and I served a lot of search warrants. Everybody says that. Until you serve a search warrant on them. As long as it's that guy, I don't have anything to hide as long as you're searching him. But as soon as you start to infringe upon a person's rights, they want their constitutional rights, you're violating their rights, everything. They don't mind until it comes home to rest.
And as we were reminded last week by the FBI agent, now general counsel with the ACLU, reminded us, you know, that you can essentially sort of, I mean, I hate to even say this on the air, but, you know, I could call up and accuse Mark of doing strange strange and mysterious activities.
I'd sue you, Terry.
I know you'd sue you.
In fact, probably be valid.
Well, yeah. I mean, what would be the difference, right? But you
truth
know.
Is a defense.
But let's just say if it wasn't true, as to what you know. Okay.
But in either case, the FBI could become involved, could be, and, you know, there's Mark, a nice guy, and he's getting search warrants or whatever, and, you know, that kind of oppression can happen that quickly, gentlemen, and we know it can. And it scares me that we have – I know – and sort of put it in perspective, I have a very good friend who just came over from Moscow who was head of the Moscow Bureau in the FBI. And one of his big...
You're hanging out with the KGB?
You mean
are you telling us you have a friend who's a KGB agent?
Acronym, Terry, you meant KGB.
In case you guys...
So your friends torture people in Russia? Is that what you're trying to tell us, Terry?
In case you guys didn't know, the FBI...
Mark, I'm sorry to worry about Terry.
I don't know. He is the plant.
The FBI...
We'll just call you Putin.
The FBI is in Moscow and works closely with the Russians on security issues. Anyway, but his point was... cybersecurity, you know, is the major threat of the time and the age.
And let me say this. There is a legitimate role to protect cybersecurity.
Yes, there is.
I mean, we do not want someone getting the nuclear codes to the computers that control something that could cause the end of the world. Oh, so, yeah. And they are, and to be fair, those are not connected to the internet as far as I know. I haven't been in one of the bunkers.
Yeah, Facebook. But missile.
Click. Oops. Yeah. No, I mean.
Facebook.
So,
bunker.
But frankly, I think... You know, cybersecurity, it's funny, cyber warfare can be good or evil. I was very pleased to hear about the Stuxnet virus, which apparently most people think it's Israel and the United States and maybe Germany who put it. We don't really know where it came from. But basically, it stopped Iran's nuclear program for at least 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. So there's good cyber warfare, and but we have to protect ourselves, just like any, you know, any weapon can be used for good or for evil. We have to protect ourselves from that. So I agree there is a legitimate need for cybersecurity. What I'm concerned by, though, is the corporations who want to regulate the internet themselves. I'm less concerned about even the government than the corporations who want to say, all right, we're Verizon. We're not going to let you go to the Google site or to the Comcast site, or we're Comcast. We're not going to let you go and see what AT&T's prices are, or we're going to censor you, or we're Fox News, or we're going to put a certain political view. My concern, frankly, even more than the government, is the corporations themselves who are trying to limit our access to the internet.
Look at it this way. When it comes to the recent wars, the corporations had a lot of input regarding the invasion of Iraq, regarding war. There was a lot of money to be made, Halliburton, Bechtel, and many, many others. So when the corporations can control have the control of the internet, if they want a country invaded or if they want some type of military
action. You mean like Chile and Nicaragua?
Many American wars have begun based on false premises. Let's face it. I mean, remember the Maine, the 1898 Spanish-American War? There's a boiler accident, and suddenly we're in charge of Puerto Rico, Cuba, and the Philippines.
But even worse than that,
and there's the Gulf of Tonkin incident in Vietnam.
Besides false information, I mean, it's like AT&T being involved in the whole Chilean crisis, and so we're down there, you know, basically...
There was United Fruit Company, which is one of the main reasons we were in Central America 100 years ago.
Yes.
So there's a long pattern of that, and anytime access to information is censored, I'm concerned, whether it be by the government, corporations, or anyone else, which is why we need net neutrality.
Now, we need net neutrality, but
some people don't know what net neutrality is, so can we explain what net neutrality is?
Go ahead.
Good Garland? Mark.
Well, no, you can't, Garland.
He's a lawyer, Mark. You're a lawyer.
Well, it's not a legal concept because it's not really in the law yet, though the FCC is trying to put it there. Basically, it's the idea that everyone has equal access to the internet. Basically, you get on and you get in the stream, and rich or poor, you get the same speed, you get to go to the same places, you're not censored as to where you go or how fast you go. And how fast you go is important too.
Absolutely.
Because if they slow your speed to 1,000th the speed of a rich person, you know, you could wait all day to go to a few places on the internet, and we know how bad that is.
Like progressive sites, it would be a little harder to get there.
Could be. Yeah. Exactly. So equal access matters, and it's something that the Democrats have long supported, and the Republicans are very much against because they believe that people should get access to the internet based either on who you know or how much you pay.
Well, and they believe mainly that the corporation should decide that.
That's right.
Not the government. The corporation
The fact is
free market, as they call it.
Yeah. They don't want a free market when it comes to the internet. Yeah.
Right.
They want the corporations to be able to decide how far
you
go.
The fact is that the internet access is already being prioritized by Google and by everybody else, simply because of the incredible weight of data that is transferring back and forth. So it's already happening to some degree. But I still think, in my opinion, guys, the greater threat is, I mean, I've said for many times, as you know, take it to the streets, right? So suppose, you know, we finally decide, okay, we've got to make a
You'd be out there in Cairo right now.
In fact,
I think you're a little jealous, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
Terry, you want to be there, don't you?
I know you do.
Yeah. There's a million little Terrys running through the streets of Cairo.
Terry watches TV and he starts drooling. He's just like, I want to be there.
Well, what a beautiful thought. It's a beautiful thought. A million little Terrys running through. I mean, that's gorgeous.
Oh my God. Call out the truth.
Anyway, I am still worried. I still worry most about government because the greatest abuses that I've seen happen in the United States, whether it's been to blacks during World War II, whether it's been to sterilization.
Or before, about 3 years before that, too.
But, has been government policy. I mean, the greatest atrocities in the United States have been committed by the government for the most part.
Or government allowing private people to do those atrocities.
Which honestly is the government's doing it.
Yeah. Well, it's both. My problem is I want the government to be a police chief. I want them to watch and make sure corporations don't mistreat us.
Yeah, I don't know if the government is ever a case. I mean, there's obviously you got to have cybersecurity, which involves all kinds of, coding and
military sites and things
like that. And constant surveillance and all that. That's part of the police work that we need the government to do.
I'm less.
But the idea of it shutting down the entire – and the current bills, what they're proposing is that the press – and these bills, again, have been going on for the last 15 years. And the sad thing is we haven't passed any kind of security act for cyber, which we must do. But the part for the president, which is really upsetting to me, is he can declare a state of emergency. There we are, Mark Garland and I out in a million terrorists.
Snowstorm.
out there deciding to march on the Capitol because we're all pretty well convinced that the system ain't really working too well. And so we get a demonstration going.
I don't think that would be constitutional.
Hang. I don't know if it's constitutional.
No, they can't do a prior restraint on speech.
But that's yeah, right. And you can't have preemptive war either. Man, you can't arrest people without due process.
Actually, there's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits preemptive war.
Surely if it goes to the Supreme Court, they're ruling your...
Right.
But the
bills as proposed would be the president can declare a state of emergency, a cyber state of emergency. It doesn't have to be anything else. Just a cyber state of emergency and can shut down the internet.
You got the language of the bill there.
I don't know if I have it exactly here, but I think so.
Okay.
But for 30 days. He can shut it down for 30 days. Then he has to get congressional approval. I take that back. 30 days, it can be extended to 90 days. After 90 days, it has to get congressional approval. Now, this legislation is being sponsored by Harry Reid, chairs of 7 committees, Senators Joe Lieberman, Rockefeller, Carl Levin, Patrick Leahy, Dianne Feinstein, John Kerry, and Jeff Bingaman.
I want to be clear what you're saying, Terry.
Expresses a sense of Congress. Okay. It's not a law yet. Let me see if I can find it exactly here. But I know that, the emergency declaration would last 30 days unless the president renews it. But it could not last more than 90 days without congressional action. Now, what that means, if you've got a demonstration going like you've got it in Egypt, and it's somewhat dependent on communication, even between individuals, even between family members, for that matter, 30 days is a long time.
Frankly, in America, the internet's more important, far more important than in Egypt.
Yeah, 30 days is a long, long time.
So you could defuse any
movement in 30 days.
You're saying the president could declare an emergency? What under what grounds? Is it just an emergency? Does it have grounds there? Unrest?
It's obviously like any other piece of legislation. It's umteen pages long.
Tell you what, let me explore that while you talk.
Yeah, and it doesn't doesn't define it well enough, but there are a number of sites you can go to, and I may have them on the back page.
Yeah, really need to get that legislation printed out and go over it.
Because it's very scary.
Yeah, because the thing about it is this, and this is what I see, and I would imagine there – with what's going on now, there are a number of regimes around the world who are getting the heebie-jeebies, whose knees are knocking. Because here's what's happened. It's like what is democracy? Democracy is supposed to give the many and weak power against the few and powerful.
Well, at least
right?
a voice. Yeah, at least a voice.
It equalize the power between the many and weak and the few and powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. And what has happened here is with Facebook, with Twitter, with the internet, with these sites, the many people in Egypt who don't have money, who don't have power, were able to unite and able to exercise their power against the few and the That's with right. all the political and financial power. And I think worldwide, that's something that always causes fear to, you know, let's face it, most countries are ruled by an elite class in one way or another.
Sure.
And that always causes fear to the few and the powerful when they see a means for large numbers of people to start uniting.
And a means that has never existed before because of the disappearance of
instant.
The disappearance of time.
I do think some of what's going on in Egypt, frankly, is as age-old as humanity. I mean, certainly the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution. There are many revolutions. I mean, and frankly, today, at this point, we've learned Mubarak can't stop it.
But would it,
turning off the internet doesn't stop it. Yeah. There are millions in the streets. Right. They can remain in the streets.
But I don't see that it could have happened the way it did.
No.
Because,
there's no question.
You know why? Because here's the thing about it. So let's say there's 1 million or 2 million people who feel this way. There may be only a few thousand who have the nerve to go out in the street, and the rest of them are kind of antsy. And it's easy to go round up that few little thousand and arrest them, and everybody else goes on about their business. But when this is spread throughout millions of people, and everyone at the same time says, "I mean, the
you can't arrest
it.
You can arrest a thousand, you can't arrest a million."
And a couple tweets going on, and everybody says, "I'll go." A million times. Now everybody has the nerve to go out. They all go out, and there's too many.
Even more basic than that. I mean, if you and Mark go out and join a demonstration, and you know, I care about you guys a little bit, you know, I care about you, and I want to find out, you know, if you're okay and the internet's down, then I'm immediately going to get a little bit worried.
The other thing was they shut down cell phones. It's not just the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, all forms of communication.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the most effective ways that Algeria put down its protest is first thing it did is banned all the media, and then it went out and it killed about 30,000 people.
Sure.
And you know what? The protest stopped.
Well, that's exactly one of the main reasons why Tiananmen Square. It's very hard to get news out of Egypt right now. I mean, they're doing it through satellites.
But CNN is still there.
You got to wonder something. If it happened before they could shut it down, you have to wonder what would have happened with the Chinese democracy movement if they had Facebook and Twitter. And it had hit broad over a couple of days before they got a chance to shut it down.
It's true.
Yeah.
One of the main ways they stopped Tiananmen Square was instead of getting troops around Beijing, who would be very hesitant to shoot at their fellow Chinese, they got them from way out in the provinces where no one had ever heard of what was going on in Tiananmen Square. And those troops were the ones who
There's a thousand ways to intimidate the masses. And a perfect example of that is they've actually given a permit for one of the first times, I don't know if you saw this in the news, for a demonstration against Putin in Russia. You know, hear ye, that's a good idea. 500 people showed up. That's wonderful. They've gotten a permit. They make their little speech. 500 people show up. They're surrounded by 2,000 cops.
Mm-hmm.
They're surrounded by a barbed wire enclosure.
Right.
There's tanks sitting at every entranceway.
You know, that's not so different from when I tried to protest the Republican National Convention in San Diego in 1996. We were put on a playground on this concrete, very, very hot, by the way, in California this summer. Put on this concrete with barbed wire all around us about a mile away. And they called it, I think, a free speech zone.
Remember, with the Bush administration, they had a free speech zone.
When I was in Boston at the Democratic Convention, I covered the Democratic Convention in Boston, and we had a free speech zone no bigger than, you know, half a block here in Adams Morgan. Barbed wire, you know, sharpshooters all around. National Guard, Secret Service, Bush's inaugural
in 2000. They stuck us in this. We were allowed one. You may remember that. Many of our listeners probably were there with me in the cold. You know, hundreds of thousands or more protesters than were supporters of George Bush in 2000. Yeah. And we're stuck in that zone.
And we know the power of the internet. I mean, if we were getting, you know, stuck, you know, our surrounded by that, and if we had access to YouTube or or to our telephones or everything else, we could be showing the world, or certainly showing fellow Americans, what's going on here. Here's the 6,000 tanks against us. Here's the 40,000 policemen surrounding us.
Well, I mean, that's what they did in Iran. It was the tweets, really, when they started shutting down the cameras. Because that's what they did in Iran. They shut down the cameras, but people could still tweet.
Garland's point is exactly right. Every government, including ours, I promise you, is scared of what's happening in Egypt.
Right.
Because it's scary what's happening, and no government wants its power eroded.
True, but in a democracy such as we still have aspects of in America,
well, then why
there are ways to fight back.
Why do they want to pass this law?
I find that law extremely frightening.
Yeah, they may not be as fearful as, say, you know, the Jordan would be right now. But as Terry said, I'm sure there is healthy concern.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, when I looked at that law, it says they can shut down industries for cybersecurity purposes. Mm-hmm. So I need to look at the language of the
industry.
I'm not so sure that it could say that you stop every internet.
It goes
connection.
No, but here's the thing. But here's the thing. Okay, even if they don't, if they say shut down industries, if you shut down Google or or Facebook
or Twitter.
You shut down select social networking
that's
sites,
what it means. Of course,
you shut down, you know, Facebook or Twitter. You there's a threat. Yeah, I think Osama bin Laden or somebody has a Facebook page. We got to shut down Facebook.
Well, I mean, if you go back and
really,
check,
he's on Facebook.
Probably
can we poke him? Sorry.
Yeah, there we go.
I mean, if you want to research, just go back and look at H-773, which goes back to a bill introduced by Rockefeller out of West Virginia, and that's goes back to 2009 or 2008. I mean, this debate has been going on for a long time, and it varies depending on who's screaming and who's hollering, on how specific it is, on what can be shut down when and where. But it always, no matter how they reword it, go back and take a look at it. And again, H-773, the current one, S-21.
H-R-773 is a House resolution. S is a Senate bill. But Rockefeller's a senator, so I'm confused by what you're saying. But we'll look it up.
Well, he was one of the supporters. But go and check it out, because if you watch the progression on all of this, they redefine it 14 different ways, trying to make it, you know, acceptable or pass the Supreme Court or whatever. But it still gets down to the president is going to have power to, with the declaration of cyber emergency, no matter how you phrase it, to shut it down.
Right.
We got to get some phone callers in too, while we still have the capability of having phones.
Right.
Before
now that you've completely frightened everybody.
Assume we have that capability.
Yeah,
Terry. We may not get any calls.
Yeah, hopefully we can open the phone lines 202-588-0893. It's been
89.3 FM. That's the station we're on.
Yeah, okay.
WPFW
588.
202. Both of you failures. 202-588-0893. Thank you.
Okay. That's the phone line to jump into this conversation while we still can communicate. We're coming up on a break in just a couple of minutes, but do call in 202-588-0893, because this is this is getting closer and closer to being enacted one way or the other.
And it's interesting because, you know, when you look at you know, I think this is going to be a thing where clearly the internet itself changed the course of world history.
Yeah.
Facebook, Twitter, and these social networking, I think, you know, when people look back in the unlikely event that we survive global warming, about 100 years from now, people look back and they see where there were different changes, where there were, you know, forks in the road, where there was changes in world history, I think the whole social networking thing will be seen as a fork in the road where world history changed, because it changes the way. Holy moly.
The phone lines are filled up, and I'll tell you what, let's Dave.
That was quick. Yeah. We opened the phone lines and boom, four listeners.
Yeah, Dave, let's go ahead and take our break, because we've got Anthony, we've got Steve, we've got Star waiting to talk to us on the phones. We don't want to lose anybody. We have to take a break here.
You listen to 89.3. 3FM, WPFW, the Raucous Caucus.
The Raucous Caucus.
Back after this.
In Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
What? Greetings, I'm John Hughes, newly appointed General Manager of WPFW. By way of introduction, I'm coming to my appointment having the benefit and blessing of a long-term career in public broadcasting. Equally important, I'm coming as an avid listener and member of WPFW. It's an honor and privilege to serve our community, and I'm looking forward to working with staff, volunteers, our local station board, and our community advisory board to ensure WPFW continues to provide programs and services that enrich your life. While we're proud of our many accomplishments, we know we have some major hurdles to clear. During the past year, the station faced serious challenges that adversely affected our ability to provide the level of operational and customer service you as members require. Our priority is to rebuild our relationship with our listeners and members. We pledge to live up to the level of stewardship that's worthy of your financial support. Our aspirations are high, and we take our inspiration from Washington, D.C.'s favorite son, Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington. In 1943, Duke Ellington premiered his remarkable composition, New World A-Comin'. And that's the theme for WPFW's winter fundraising campaign, New World A-Comin'. It speaks to our ambition, our new strategies, and our commitment to ensuring a financially strong and stable organization. We're determined to ensure that WPFW has the technical and operational infrastructure required to meet the needs of this community. Our pledge to you, our members, is to earn your confidence that this station, your station, the station you've invested in, has the stability to provide the high-quality service you expect. Between February 3rd and February 19th, our goal is to substantially increase the number of new and renewing members. Our promise to the WPFW community is New World A-Comin'. Please make an investment in this vital service by becoming a new member or renewing your membership. And as always, thanks for your support.
WPFW, Washington.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
And good evening. This is Terry D. Kester on the Raucous Caucus with
Garland Nixon.
Oh, I love it. And
Mark Levine.
The same two guys. I mean, they're incredible. Do you see the way they sit here together? And they, never mind. I'm sorry, guys. Anyway, this is Raucous Caucus on WPFW.
Aw, Terry, that's so sweet. It's the nicest you've ever been to us.
I know. It's the nicest I'm ever going to be to you guys. I can tell you that right now. This is the Raucous Caucus on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica in Washington, D.C., and it's a privilege, as always, to be here with you, and it's a privilege to have you calling in, 202-588-0893. And first on the phones right here is Anthony. Is this the Anthony who I called Stanley last week?
It is. It is. Unfortunately, I can't be with you today, but you guys refused to put me on the show.
Anthony, Garland and I know your name. Terry, yeah, I don't know what his problem is.
I'm working on it. Anthony.
This is Anthony, AnthonyTalks.com, et cetera.
Okay,
now,
speak up.
I'm calling because a moment ago I was stunned and dismayed to hear someone on the panel praise the Stuxnet virus. Now, unfortunately, There seems to be a misunderstanding of what's going on here. The Stuxnet virus, even if it was capable of doing what it says, which is putting back the Iranian nuclear weapons production or nuclear energy capability back into the Stone Age, two things. Number one, the virus is not contained within the Iranian system. The virus will travel and has traveled internationally. Secondly, this virus has the ability to cause disruptive reactions in the nuclear system that can be disastrous. We can have meltdowns. We can have all kinds of things, which came by the fact that America and the West had failed to negotiate a treaty with the Iranians. So by adopting and basically falling into this whole argument that the West has been making, demonizing the ability of the Iranian government to have the nuclear cycle, which is their right under international law, and promoting the cyber warfare that we're using. I mean, it's just stunning to hear on a progressive radio show.
Stunning, but you know, we're a little bit off topic. But Mark,
it is addressed to me.
Spend a moment on it.
I'll just to correct you.
Maybe it is Stanley posing as Anthony. You know,
first of all, it was actually incredibly targeted, so that it does absolutely nothing to anything other than the Iranian nuclear program.
That
is correct. You can look it up, Anthony. The other thing is that
hold on, Anthony.
I don't believe that every dictator on Earth deserves their own nuclear weapon. I don't want Jared Loughner to have a nuclear weapon. I don't like that Kim Jong-il has one, if we can stop him from having one. I think the fewer nuclear weapons, the better. And particularly when a country is dedicated to the eradication of another country. I don't want that country to have a nuclear weapon.
Okay, we're getting way off. We're getting way off topic.
I'm not even crazy about us having them.
We
don't want to get off topic.
We're getting way off
topic.
We'll get back to
you. We don't want to usurp Terry's.
We can do a show on that and probably should. But let's get back to the cyber problem. You know, let me point out one of the things
against Terry.
You know, when cyber emergency would be declared, and you know, it's not so much, you know, this nuclear thing which we all worry about and we sort of overplay, frankly. But what it really is simple things. All you have to do is shut down a good portion of the grid. That's all you have to do, which, again, can be done by cyber invasion.
It's interesting. They didn't shut off entirely the grid in Egypt. If you looked, they narrowed it. They took it down about 99%.
No, I mean the electrical grid.
But there was still a little. Oh, okay.
The electrical grid.
All right.
You could also, by cyber invasion, shut down various FAA flight control centers, which would create chaos in the
you
area.
You don't have to give everybody the how-to, Terry.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm telling the bad guys as if they didn't know.
Oh, Osama listens to our show.
I know he does.
The truth, as old and beat up as our electrical grid is, they won't have to. It's going to shut itself down in a couple years.
Well, yeah, if we talk loud enough, one fuse will blow, and that's it. All right, let's go on to Terry here. And Terry, this is Terry, and you've spoken to us before, I believe, and thank you for calling in. Your thoughts on the cyber warfare and having the internet closed down simply because the president declares it.
Thank you for taking this call.
Sure.
And I'm glad to participate. You know, what I would like to just do is pose the question, you know, at what point will the people recognize that what the people believe in is one thing, and what the globally elite or the controllers of the country believe are another? The people believe in democracy. Democracy would mean don't shut down my, you know, access to communication. That's really the First Amendment. You know, so I think that it's not about somebody telling the people what they can and can't do. You know, and I know that we're saying this all in relation to Egypt, but I'm just amazed at how we can focus so deeply on this thing going on in Egypt versus what has been going on in the Ivory Coast. Again, you have a leader, you had an election, he doesn't want to leave. Our government is supporting the wrong guy.
Yeah.
You
it
know,
happens
the
all
NATO
over the
forces
planet.
Are trying to, you know, help him out. The masses of the people who had a democratically elected president there, Gbagbo. What is this that the people now have to suffer from the leaders who now, I'm going to shut down all of your everything, so whatever it is, you cannot get your word out, you cannot get a clear understanding, we're going to just block the information, you will have a mismatch in what you think you know versus what is going on. I don't really have an answer, but I just wanted to throw
all that out there because these
leaders have to go when they are practicing undemocratic principles.
Well, let me just throw this in. There's not a whole lot of oil around the Ivory Coast in that area, so they're certainly not going to get the attention of our government.
I also think it's partly racism. I mean, I think that it, I'll tell you this. Terry, I'm really glad you mentioned the Ivory Coast. The United States has a long history of supporting a long slew of dictators.
Our national policy. Are you kidding?
I can think of at least 15 Good or 20 grief. Right off the bat. And then when the people rise up to overthrow them, we're like, who, us?
We sit by quietly.
Iran, for God's sake.
Exactly. We supported the Shah of Iran when he tortured his own people, and then we ended up getting something worse. Now, there are examples where we've supported dictators. I think of the Philippines and Panama comes to mind, Marcos and Trios, where we've actually managed to back out of our support and get to democracy. So
I think it can go either way. To me, communication is probably one of the first pillars of democracy. How can you have democracy if you don't even know what is what?
You have to find what is what,
and the people have to hear what is what. The American people don't even have democracy here because they don't have to shut down the airways and the passageways simply because the people are their whole minds are distorted. They're on drugs. They're on illegal drugs. They're on prescription drugs. They're on alcohol. They're on all this sex.
And some of them just don't care.
Just totally distracted.
The majority of them are not on drugs.
what the issues are.
But let me put you a little perspective in response to that, Terry, and thank you so very much for calling. I mean, this is something we talk about all the time in terms of what is the role of the citizen. And I think we have to realize the reality is you cannot expect – I mean, I wish it were not true, but you cannot expect the average person who, you know, may be working one full-time job, two full-time jobs, trying to raise a family, trying to do all this stuff, and at the same time get up every morning, read the Christian Science Monitor, read The Guardian, read The Washington Post.
Follow the Super Bowl. Follow, look at reality television.
And play video games. Do all of this.
All the important things.
Yeah, but do all of this and be involved with what is really happening in the country. So what has to happen is those of us, including Terry, who just called in, and hopefully us here at WPFW, those of us who are making an effort to understand what's going on, we are the ones who have to take action. We are the ones that
and
have to
we
take
have to
action.
Remind the media to focus. I mean,
yes,
she made a very
exactly.
good point about the Ivory Coast. There are areas of the world that the media spends very little attention, time and attention.
You know, I'm very pleased that John Kerry, at least finally somebody, stood up and said, and I like his quote, you know, basically, Mubarak, you have to gracefully go.
Yeah.
At least somebody in our government said, hey, go away.
And you know what? The thing about it is here, and I know we want to get back to our calls. The thing about it is here, it's that, you know, the issue comes up again and again. We support people who, are, you know, and they wonder why people burn American flags and stuff in the streets, why they're mad at us. They're really angry at their governments, but they can't go against their government. So they go around the government and they say we're angry at America for supporting our government. But time and again, we claim we're for democracy, but we support these autocratic governments. We support these, you know, tyrants.
We're for
and all these other people.
That's what
and
we're
we say
for.
It benefits our national interest.
Realpolitik.
Yeah, and you
and
remember,
why,
you know, for those of us, for those who
are,
us who are older, we used to actually say whether it was a lie or not is another question. But we used to actually say, you know, we are defending America.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt famously said, "He may be a bastard, but he's our bastard."
Yeah, but we've gone way back away from that. We now always say it's just the addition of one word. We have to defend America's interests.
Right.
At least we're in some sense being a little bit more honest. And
there's only one thing
we care about in terms of Egypt. That's the Suez Canal.
The Suez Canal. Yeah.
That's what we care about.
Because that's about
Yeah, we don't care about democracy.
Through.
We care about the Suez Canal. Yeah. Let's get our callers in here. Steve, you're on the line. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hi. I have to say I have to agree with your first caller. I was also dismayed about the support for disrupting the Iranian nuclear program. And here's the reason. The United States, in America, in the United States, people casually talk about, should we invade Iraq? Should we overthrow the Iranian government? What should we do about Venezuela? What should we do about Cuba? This casual kind of idea that we are the people that should determine all this. And the question I always have, and this came up with waterboarding too, was, do these countries have the right to do this to us? I mean, if we say to somebody, we're going to overthrow your government,
that's kind of a Darwinian world politics.
We should do whatever we can to disrupt the United States. That's not aggression. That's defense. Because you've already said you want to topple these governments.
I like Steve's point of view. I do want to make a distinction between dictatorships. Hang on one second. Go ahead and finish your sentence there, Mark. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead and finish your sentence.
I just wanted to say that the problem is it's the American empire.
Yes.
The idea that an empire can do anything to anybody it wants. And let me remind you of one thing. There's only one country in the world that has ever used nuclear weapons.
Okay.
In hostility.
Steve, you got some good points. All right.
And the idea that we're
somehow
this kind of pure regime that everybody else is this dangerous country that might use nuclear weapons, when we've already done it, is like,
well, there's one realistic thing. I mean, it's very unlikely that Iran or Iraq was ever planning to attack United States of America. Now, yes, the issue of Israel is another issue, and I'm not, you know, denying that. But, I mean, we feel threatened, or we pretend we're threatened by Cuba, for pity's sakes. We're still worried about Cuba threatening us.
I think
Mark,
we have
go
just
ahead.
An obligation throughout the world to support democracy and to oppose
which we don't
which
do.
To me, it doesn't
matter whether it's Egypt or Iran or Saudi Arabia.
But we do the
or
opposite, which is what Steve's point is. is. We do exactly
and
the
you
opposite.
Know, and to some extent, let me say this, because I know we want to get back to our calls on the subject.
Hang on, Star. We're coming
way,
up on
I
you.
I don't know. I'm kind of like the Star Trek people where you kind of let people do. In a way, I say we should support democracy. But you know what? If a country doesn't want to, you know what I mean? I mean, we are going to make the assumption.
No, if there's a benevolent dictator.
But
when the people go out and march and want a democracy, which they've done in Iran and in Egypt.
Yep.
And when the government, frankly, in North Korea, if they were allowed to. And when the dictator is spending more time enriching themselves and, yes, developing nuclear weapons, that's when we need to be on the side of the people, side of the dictator.
And I think what I was saying is this. Support democracy from the perspective of when the people move towards democracy, yes, but not we're going to run over and grab your country.
No, I'm not
say
saying
you're
in vain.
You know what I mean?
I'm not saying in vain.
Impose democracy.
That's actually why I like the virus.
The only way that this is ever going to be resolved, if it can, and I doubt it can, but the only way is when we all, and leading by, it has to start with the empire. We've got to surrender a bit of our sovereignty and participate in the United Nations and create a United Nations that becomes a bigger, more effective police force.
Now let's drift back to
as
computers.
Opposed to one country going against the other.
Yeah,
I disagree with you, Terry, but let's go back
to computers.
What are you, a sovereignty
I believe in America. I don't want a bunch of United Nations
bureaucrats. It's a darn good thing that Star called in.
Yes, right.
I'll tell you, Star, welcome
Hello,
to the
Star.
Raucous Caucus.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I'm calling to respond also to the comments that were made about the virus being good when it was directed.
Well, Star, let me say this. I appreciate that, but let me start,
yes.
Please. I appreciate that. But however, here's the problem, and that is Terry brought a very, very it's a very important subject, and it's you know proximate to what's going on right now. And I think we've gotten to the point we only have an hour show, and not to interrupt you, but we've drifted. We keep drifting away one subject, and maybe that's something we can talk about another time. But I hate to leave such an important subject to talk about a virus. Although I very much respect what you have to say.
About the virus, I was going to respond to your response to the caller.
Okay,
I think that you said that in the hands of a dictator, you didn't want to see nuclear power. And I think that before we determine whether a virus is good or not, we need to be very mindful of the character of the country or the organizations that are using it.
Star, I think we're having a little bit of a little bit of a communication issue, Star. I appreciate what you're saying, but I do want to get back to what we were talking about at the internet.
Let me redirect this. Thank you, Garland, very much, and thank you, Star, for calling in. And that's a show. That's another show.
That's another show. You know,
I probably should do it since it's mostly directed at me. I'll do it another week.
It's Mark's fault.
We've got important things to do.
But listen. Redirect us and understand this. I mean, you worry about dictators. You worry about national policy. Okay, put it in perspective. You now have before your Congress a bill that has been negotiated for years that they are refining, trying to pass so that the President of the United States, when he is so advised or so chooses to declare a cyber emergency, can, in fact, close the internet. He can close it on specific companies or specific organizations such as Google, or he can close it overall. This is the bill that is now being considered as part of Cybersecurity Competitive Act, S-21. Again, for the history, go back and look at H.R. 773. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a bill that's going to be passed that's going to allow one man. Think of it in terms of George Bush, Dick Cheney.
Who knows it's going to be Sarah Palin?
Sarah Palin, whatever. One person can
bite your tongue.
One person can say that's it. The internet is closed until I, one person, President of the United States, say you can open it again. If that doesn't scare the living hell out of you, you aren't thinking this thing
through. Before we go to this caller, let me say something. We're going to go to this caller.
We're going to go to Danny next.
Yeah, let me tell you something that scares me, and that is this. This is the level of the lack of knowledge and the lack of I hate to use the term, the level of political ignorance in America, and that is this, including me, that something of this magnitude is on the table, and Terry has to
scream,
and I'm sitting here, I didn't even know about it.
Here's something
of this magnitude is on the table.
We need to make sure that people write their members of Congress.
It was like the Patriot Act.
To make sure
that nobody read.
That cybersecurity relates to cybersecurity and not to shutting
down. Because like the Patriot Act, we wait till these things go through, and then we scream and yell and say, I can't believe this happened, but we didn't even have
it. Yeah, well, consider this a warning. Okay. Danny, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Sure, no problem. I'll tell you this much, and this is from my own opinion. We're so saturated with media in all directions that I can barely think on my own, but I'm going to make an attempt. If this individual is given the power over the objection of this Congress and NBC Universal Comcast, who just sealed the deal, can you imagine shutting the internet down? I guarantee you this, if you shut it down, you may not be able to turn it back on, and with the threat of security in doing so would be far greater than giving the power to anyone to do such an act. I mean, it's just the stakes are enormous. We could be attacked beyond control. This is, and then again, I hate to say it, I don't think this new Congress here would give this individual that type of power in his term anyway. They want to get rid of him. I mean, look at the crises now in Egypt. Look at it's going to spread like an inoperable cancer. And if this man stays in office until September, can you manage the carnage that's going to happen and the further erosion of Internet access and neutrality? The best thing for him to do is to either leave the country. He can go to Israel, or he can go to Saudi Arabia, or go to Iran. But the bottom line is, this will be a test of a limp, insipid foreign policy in the Obama administration, just like the Secretary of State said on Sunday's Meet the Press, that we've been a friend to the people of Egypt for 30 years. I don't know where she's been the last 30 years. She better stop. I don't know what she's been smoking, but I'd like to take a look at it. This is a world crisis in the making.
It could be. It very well could be. And again, you know, here's where to begin and to focus this again. This is being sponsored by Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democratic Nevada, and the chairs of seven committees with jurisdiction over cybersecurity, including Senator Joe Lieberman, Connecticut, Jay Rockefeller, Democrat, West Virginia, Carl Levin, Democrat, Michigan, Patrick Leahy, Democrat, Vermont, Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, John Kerry, Democrat, Massachusetts, and Jeff Bingaman, Democrat,
the thing,
New Mexico.
A lot of those people you named, I have a lot of respect for. Let me give you Pat Leahy, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, is generally pretty good. So I want to look at the language carefully. If they've overlooked something, we need to make sure.
No. They haven't overlooked. Let me give you. Again, I mentioned this friend of mine that came that's with the FBI and is way up in the FBI.
I mean, and his profession
is in cybersecurity. Now, I spent many hours talking to him about the threat, and he was informing me about the threat to cybersecurity. I guarantee you, if this particular gentleman I know, and there's many more from the FBI or whomever, go to any congressman, any senator, and tell them the extent of the threat, they are close to panic mode.
Mm-hmm.
That we are in fact.
Look,
we in fact are being attacked.
Of course, we are.
At least 1,000 times a day,
right?
And
if you need to shut down someone who's trying to hack into our military computers, I'm all for it.
That's obvious. But
the question is
far broader.
It is. The question
is far broader.
Can you tailor the legislation to only affect true cybersecurity, not take away our freedom?
And the point is, they haven't.
Is there going to be a hearing on this bill?
Right.
Because the public would have a chance
Isn't that interesting that, like you say, you didn't know about it, I didn't know about it, nobody. This goes back at least 4 or 5 years.
And who the heck was hearing about it? And let's not forget the Patriot Act. You know, a lot of people who I dearly respect in Congress voted for the Patriot Act, didn't read it, didn't know what
was there when
it
happened, and I can tell you how it happened.
And let me say this. There were a lot of people who didn't want to seem unpatriotic, and there was a lot of foolishness, but the bottom line is, don't assume there are people members of Congress who I may support 99% of the time, but who every now and then vote for a bill that I really don't like.
Well, let me tell you a quick story about the Patriot Act,
because
it does relate to this. Pat Leahy wanted to study that very carefully. He took it under advisement. He took it under his committee. And at that time, George Bush said to Tom Daschle, who was the majority leader at the time, if you don't pass this and there's another terrorist attack, the blood will be on the feet of you, Tom Daschle. At which point, after saying that week after week after week, finally Daschle pulled the bill from Leahy, said, we're going to do it exactly what George Bush wants. And he rolled him as the majority leader has the right to do.
And are you trying to tell me the same tactic isn't going on right now?
Of course it is.
There's say whether it is or it isn't. There I'm is giving somebody,
you know darn well there is somebody there saying if we don't pass this bill and give the president the power to do this when he needs to do it, it means that the next day the FAA will be shut down and all the planes will crash.
And whatever and happens, be on you. We do know by that example, if nothing else, we know that legislation can get through that in hindsight we'll look at and we'll say it's far too overreaching and intrusive and the genie's out of the bottle and we've been fighting, the ACLU has been fighting, everybody. Everybody's been fighting to get the Patriot Act cleaned up for the last 10 years. And people who voted for it are, you know, the heel of their hands hitting them in the forehead saying, darn, why did I do this?
Yeah.
But now, once it's through, you're fighting to get
and
it back
as we've
in.
Talked
do you know there's only one senator that voted against the Patriot Act? His name is Russ Feingold. He's no longer a senator.
That's right. And as we know, once power is given, it is never given up.
I know. I ain't giving it up if you give me a little bit of power,
We got time for one more caller, and it's our good friend RG. RG, thanks for waiting.
Hello, gentlemen. How you doing tonight?
Okay. Hi, RG.
RG, my man.
Yes, indeed. Good to hear you, Garland. Maybe I can talk to you off the air. I've got your message a little late today.
Garland's confused. There's no point in talking to him. Go ahead.
Yeah, we always talk politics, you know.
I'm sure you do.
He's a brilliant genius guy, and then, you know.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
You know, that's a brilliant genius guy.
But let's not cut this man off. He's on a roll. Let the man talk.
Oh, for God's sake.
RG, enough of these peasants. What are you saying?
How much do you pay RG, Garland?
Get the man his time here.
Get on the topic.
Obviously, he's a knowledgeable individual.
He is. Get on the topic.
I'll let you settle that among yourselves. But the thing is, you know, one of the things that people haven't heard discussed at any rate, I'm sure it's probably crossed many people's minds, is to look at Egypt and it's impossible to dissociate modern Egypt from Nasser and the evolution of Egypt, I would think, from a semi military regime to a more westernized body politic. And I think that also in terms of geopolitical terms that there's been a racial pecking order in terms of trying to more or less dissociate northern Africa or Egypt and Syria, so forth and so on, Tunisia from
how does this relate to cybersecurity and the President of the United States having the power to shut you up?
Well,
and
I mean,
I'm not saying he should, but I mean that's what the reality is.
I'm not even an ant in this process. I wouldn't want to bring it home, so to speak, as Garland would say. You know.
But I mean, you know, RG. I mean, this is a problem people have got to look at. If the internet were shut down, and if the only reason it would be happening supposedly is the country's in a state of emergency, you ain't going to be able to communicate with your family members anywhere in this country.
Well, I don't know about that because I mean, the internet didn't exist before. People had telephones, you know, and you know, we might have to go back to Pony Express, but I mean,
carrier pigeon.
What I'm saying is, the main thing is, I'd like to maybe
what's
more.
What's a telephone? Is that when you text?
To the taxonomy of the way that the West views Egypt. And how they try to, I really don't appreciate trying to drag the state of Israel into this. I just don't feel that.
Wait, what has this got to do with cybersecurity, RG? You know I love you. I've talked to him a million times.
Okay, well, you know, we could talk forever about cybersecurity.
Well, that's what we should be talking about right now because this is a threat.
Well,
and nobody's paying attention to it.
Net neutrality came across my desk this morning. Mm-hmm. The first thing I thought about was that the internet didn't exist when we had the elections back in 2000 and we weren't able to more or less discuss on a pluralistic scale, not necessarily taking to the streets, the selection of President Bush.
That would have made things would have been.
Would that have made a difference?
I actually wrote an email, a very famous email about the famous Bush v. Gore. It is. It's
famous?
Notorious. And even Sandra Day O'Connor's clerk agreed with me that his boss was a hypocrite. No, I mean, I used the email. That's all we had to talk about that decision. And even that email got around to hundreds of thousands of people. Imagine how Facebook would have done it.
The only way I think we can control net neutrality is the achievement or attainment thereof of net neutrality would be to the good old-fashioned boycott. I mean, you know, but most people, including myself, you know, I never thought I would be hopelessly addicted to, the internet.
I'm going to have to leave it there, RG, only because we've run out of time completely. And if you call up ever again, RG, you know I love you, but if you call up with this nonsense about Garland, I love Garland.
How dare you insult that man, Terry?
Yeah,
one of our brilliant listeners.
Terry can't handle when you compliment someone.
I know, it hurts. It hurts. I mean, Mark here was weak.
I happen to know Garland's a brilliant genius.
Yeah, but I mean, you know.
But he pays me a lot to say that.
The tears in Mark's eyes when he was just heartbreaking. Anyway, this, of course, is the Raucous Caucus with
Mark Levine.
And
Hosni Mubarak. Yeah, I mean, Garland Nixon. I keep getting
very confused group here.
You
no,
just
no
want to be dictator of your own country.
Yeah, I do want my own country.
We got to mention that this is WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. This is the Raucous Caucus.
In Washington, D.C. Yep.
I am Terry D. Kester. We will be back with you next week, and we will be at Ben's.
Join us.
I just checked that with the staff. We'll be there, and we're going to be, you know, having that opportunity for you to give a pledge, and the gift will be you can join us right on the air.
7 p.m. next
week,
you
can
right?
sit with us, and you can see what these guys do to me when I'm trying to conduct a show here.
And we got a microphone, so you can get on the air with
yeah,
us.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And we want to thank Dave on the board over there, doing a great job for us, as
thank
usual.
Thank you,
Dave. We're going to be followed by Brother Ah with the Jazz Collectors. Always a great show, and particularly after our Raucous Caucus. We've got to have a little jazz.
Soothe the savage beast.
Very quickly, Mark, how do we find you, other than looking around the streets and seeing you out there with a flag?
Go to marklevinetv.com. You can actually catch last week's show with the FBI agent talking about how the government spies
on us. Good show.
Don't miss that show.
Really good. Garland.
Facebook me, G-A-R-L-A-N-D-N-I-X-O-N.
That's not how you spell your name.
Facebook. Garland Nixon.
I'm on Facebook, too.
There ain't a whole lot of Garland Nixons on Facebook.
Yeah, we're all on Facebook, but I don't answer Facebook, so don't go there. But you can go to WPFW.org. You can contact me always simply by calling the station, and they will give me your number, and I will get back to you immediately. And I like that direct. I like to use the phone. The hell with the Internet. Who needs it?
Don't worry about that much longer, buddy. It'll be shut down.
All right. We're leaving here. We'll be back next week at Ben's Next Door with all of you. Thank you so much for joining the Raucous Caucus.